Hello, Packers fans. Welcome to the Green 19 podcast. We have a special one for you today. We've got some special guests. As you can see, we are still here in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. It's almost time to say goodbye, but not before we say hello to a couple of people that you will be familiar with if you have followed this podcast. We've got Cassidy Hill, who now works for the Carolina Panthers. We've got Olivia Reiner, who now covers the Philadelphia Eagles.
I just say this is the happiest I've ever been on a podcast. ever. I have my two children here.
And then the crazy uncle here on the end.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is going to be the most fun I've ever had.
I have never had Spoon come to me and say, can we do a podcast?
or ever said, ooh, we're doing a podcast.
He was always, oh, no, not this again.
You know, but this is so exciting to have the family back. Yes.
We will talk about what we've seen a little bit at the Combine, but first we have to catch up because, of course, this is the lineage of hosts now between, you know, we had Olivia, Cassidy, then me. What have you guys been up to? I mean, you have not been gone very long,
No. But
we'll start with you. What are you doing? Tell everyone what you're working on now.
I'm just kicking it in warmer weather.
Yes. We know
for
that.
Starters. No. So in Carolina now, or Charlotte, covering the Panthers, I get to be in house, which is, you know, a lot of fun. It's a different world, but it's still a lot of fun just to kind of get to see the players up close, personal, you know, a lot of times around the building, and it's really exciting. It's a young football team, it's a young content team, and so there's a lot that we're getting to plan for the next few months, and it's really, really exciting to just kind of realize that you can think ahead and you know, sort of have that access. I do miss Spoon, though.
It was funny that your very first game was against
the Packers.
Christmas Day,
right?
Or Christmas Eve, or whatever it was. Yeah,
that was an easy like preview to write for the Panthers. It was really easy to write it, and then after that one, I was like, oh, now I gotta like study up on these other teams.
I know,
but no, that one was fun, and it was fun to get to see everybody. Even though I think at that point I had been gone like 3 days, but
and it was a really good game too.
It came down to the wire. That was the Jair coin toss game.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
That's
like
right.
One of the highlights.
Yeah, coach didn't know he was from Charlotte, but now he knows.
Yeah.
Now everybody knows.
We all know.
I know. Yeah. The next week when he was suspended, I saw somebody on Twitter that was like, you know, it was time for the coin toss, and they shared the GIF of like the WWE wrestler like diving from the ceiling, to the ring. And it was gonna be like Jair coming in for the coin toss.
So good.
But yeah, that's me.
All right, let's see what Olivia's been.
Yeah, what's Olivia doing?
Well, first of all, it's been such a long time since I've held this mic and this mic flag.
Right?
It is exactly the same.
Is the same one?
It probably does. My fingerprints are all over this thing. It's great to be reunited both with the mic flag and also with all of you. Good to see you. Good to see you all, everybody. Things have been good. For the last season, I guess this past year, I've been covering the Eagles. It's a relatively new thing for me. Before that, I was covering the Philadelphia Flyers of the NHL. So for the last two seasons before this season, I was doing that. It's been really nice to be back in Philly. I grew up in the area. Get to see some family. Mm-hmm. So that's been good. But I do miss Green Bay a lot. I miss all of you guys. And it's been nice, Cassidy. Like, we never worked together. But
I know.
It's been really nice to get to know you through the fact that we got to share a job.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to be back. And miss all of the Packers fans, too. Absolutely. Still, I know there's still a few out there, for sure, that they reply into stuff.
Yeah.
They will, always be with me.
They should follow you for all NFL type news.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just general merriment.
Yeah.
All right, JR.
Well, so the first question I have is going to be back to you because you cover the Philadelphia Eagles. We know they're going to Brazil at some point this year. There's rumblings, maybe the Packers or the team that joins them in Brazil. What do you have any inside knowledge? What's going to happen over, you know, what's going to happen there?
No, I mean, I would love for it to be the Packers because that could potentially mean that you all would be there too, and then we get to go to Brazil and cover a football game together. Yeah, so week one, Eagles on the road. Well, they are the home team in Sao Paulo, and who knows exactly who they're going to play. The Packers are one of the road teams that are on the Eagles' schedule for next season. So could be the Packers. I think the Browns are another team that has been reported that could potentially be playing against the Eagles week one in Brazil.
Boring.
I know.
I don't know a ton about the Browns' international fan base, but I certainly know there are plenty of Packers fans out there.
Apparently, I saw or I heard somebody say this week that the Packers are the second largest fan base in Brazil behind the Patriots.
Oh, wow.
So, Spoon, do you know any Portuguese?
I don't. I am trying to learn some Spanish, though, but it's probably not going to work
Get your Duolingo on, maybe.
Yeah. I can at least order on a menu.
They have a green and gold flag, Brazil does, right?
Ooh.
It's gold in
there. Oh,
for
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing?
A foreshadowing. I mean, it would be really good. So we're, again, here at the Combine, and I want to ask each of you, it's a general question, what it is that you get out of this experience coming to Indianapolis and meeting some of these players. Obviously, there's the testing that everyone sees on TV, but there's quite a bit more to it. And what you think the teams get out of it. Brian Gutekunst said yesterday the most important thing is the medicals and everyone knows it. And I'm sure that's true. It's also boring. No one wants to be like, they come to get x-rays and that's that. That's the most important thing. What changes do you think in teams' approach once they get through this combine process based on some of the information that they got here? And it's a completely separate question. What you as media people get out of this as well? We'll just go down the line, Cassidy.
What I don't get is sleep.
Yeah, it is tough.
That doesn't happen here.
Because you have to celebrate, too. You can't just see this. There is some
celebrating the combine.
Hanging out, too.
It's a lot. It's such a great opportunity to... This sounds so cliche, and people are going to roll their eyes. I can already hear it. But it's a great opportunity to network because everybody is – or not everybody. It's gone down a little bit over the past couple of years. But a lot of people around the NFL are here for a solid 4 to 5 days. And so agents, coaches, scouts, other media members is such a great opportunity to kind of catch up, you know, just form those relationships, forge those relationships – and you know, kind of keep up with who all is doing what, and you know, kind of get an inside track. Spoon's like a hound dog when he comes to these things.
I'm a stalker. I'm a stalker. I sit in the hallway and I.
What is a reporter if not a professional stalker?
True.
It's true.
To your question though, about for the teams though, JR, I think that it really depends on what a team needs and where they're picking as to what they can get out of the combine. Because someone that is picking in the top 10 and might need a quarterback, you want to watch every throw. You want to hear that ball come out of that guy's hands. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can send scouts to a pro day, but your head coach might not be able to make a pro day for whatever reasons. But if he can be here at this workout, if he can see the ball come out of the guy's hands with his own eyes, if he can get in a room with him, it also just kind of helps create those moments where football, more than anything, is about relationships. Again, I know that sounds cliche. But if you can have a moment with Pete Carroll and DK Metcalf, you know, their shirtless meeting at the combine that was here, that kind of immediately lets a guy know, like, okay, this coach is in it with me. That's where these relationships happen, is at the Senior Bowl and at here. Because pro days are crazy. You're jetting all over the country. You can bring guys in for visits, but the meetings that happen at the Senior Bowl, the meetings that happen here, those where you learn everything about the guy off the field, like whether or not he believes in birds.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Really a thing this week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I saw the space thing as well.
I'm going to pass this.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, just to kind of second a lot of the things that Cassidy said. I mean, yeah, it's great networking, and especially, I know, like from a media perspective and potentially from the team perspective as well. But for personal reasons, it's like I'm back in this, and I haven't been around these people in a while, so it's a good opportunity just to come back and say, hey, I'm here. This is what I'm doing now, and reconnect with some people, meet some new people. Mm-hmm. So I really love coming to this event in particular. How often do I get to hang out with all of you in the same place anymore? It's rare. It's a fun time to be here and to catch up with people that I haven't seen in a while. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of value in this that the teams can get. And Cassidy hit on a lot of it. But yeah, the medical, I think that is the boring part for maybe the fans, but that is, you know, this is a great centralized location for teams to bring their doctors and get their eyes and whatever they need to get done on these players, and you know, make sure that they are healthy and ready to go for this upcoming season. So even though that might not be like the flashiest, most exciting aspect of the combine, and they really have turned this thing into like an event for television. It's just, you know, I hope that it stays in Indy, but I could it seems like there have been discussions about moving it to somewhere like LA, but I sincerely hope it stays here, not just only for the city, but for us, for NFL fans. I think there's something, it's nice to have it in this consistent place where it has been for such a long time.
Yeah.
And I would add something that Spoon can probably speak on a lot too. A lot of business happens here this week.
Yeah. Right?
Because so many agents, GMs are here. This is where, you know, we have the free agency deadline coming up, the franchise tag deadline coming up. A lot of those conversations are happening over dinner here in the hotel bar, you know, walking to the workouts. And Spoon, you can speak to more of that. But I would say a large bulk of the business happens here. Trades.
If you're a GM or a salary cap guy, negotiator, you are doing free agent deals right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not supposed to, but everybody's doing it. They're trying to figure out what's the market, how much are they going to have to pay, and, you know, the agents are trying to blow up all the salaries to make it look like, you know, their guy's going to get a ton of money. And, you know, and you're trying to get deals done. You know, for the Packers, for instance, they want to get Aaron Jones's cap number down, but they have this, you know, sort of a line where, you know, if they go too low, he'll just say, I'm going to go to free agency. And, you know, so it's bartering, you know, and it happens all over the place. And you see the biggest agents are here, you know, and they're working it. And, you know, we work it too. The one thing I found really interesting I saw in a story this week was that like 28% of the guys aren't working out anymore. You know, like they're choosing not to work out. And Caleb Williams is the first guy I've ever heard refuse to do the medical. Which is just like, you know, there's a chance that the combine's going to become obsolete if these guys won't work out, if they'll only work out at their pro days. Because they can work on their own turf, you know. Right.
Receivers.
I think the combine's a little overrated from the testing standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think these guys have all their scouting reports. They've been doing it all off season or all during the season, going to colleges. They come here and they just want to validate what they've seen, you know, all year. And then if some guy runs, you know, an incredibly fast time, then they maybe go back and say, okay, maybe we need to reevaluate this. Mm-hmm. Or if he runs really slow, it's like, let's take a look at that again. And I think that's happening all over the place.
And it makes you question how much it should be valued, because you can see a guy increase his draft stock exponentially at the combine. Does that translate to results on the field? You know, do you learn? I feel like you almost have to look back at his tape from college to kind of really know what he's going to do on the field. Does running a fast 40 in the right cleats on the right turf when you've had the right breakfast really translate to being able to make a difference?
And like, it's the right breakfast, but also like these guys have been training for the 40 for like a month and a half now, or whatever. They go through so much. There's so much money put into preparation, not for like your NFL future, but to like test well at the combine in your pro day. And that's not what they're going to be doing professionally for the rest of their career. So, and then after that, now they've got after they get drafted, then sights set on the NFL and their careers. But like right now it's like, let's get ready for this event.
Yeah.
So I do wonder, to Spoon's point, is this ever a thing that becomes obsolete, or do teams realize that these exercises that they're doing aren't necessarily indicative of your future performance in the NFL? Perhaps they're a good baseline and a threshold, or just like, you know, each individual thing, it's additional information to supplement what is already out there on tape and how these players perform during the season. But I don't know. It's I think it's a very interesting phenomenon that, like, you know, if you have the right agent who is willing to spend the money on you and to put you in these really top tier facilities and surround you with the resources that you might need to test well at this event, then you probably will test well at the event. But what does that mean about your future in the league?
The one thing, I'll just pass it along, but here one quick comment was the thing that I was surprised to hear during Brian Gutekunst's meeting with us was the Packers now prefer to do the interviews by Zoom. So they're limited to 15 minutes on a formal interview, and I think you get 40 or 30, or I can't remember what the number is. You know, in 15 minutes, you run the guy through a bunch of stuff, you ask him some questions, but they set up Zoom where they can, you know, contact him 3 or 4 times, mm-hmm. and it's a half hour long. And so the interview process has not become as important as it was for them before. And so that changes things for the combine too.
It also makes me wonder if we see more and more emphasis on the Senior Bowl in mm-hmm. coming years, especially just because of the way that, you know, Jim Nagy has kind of got it set up and made it such a big deal again, which is funny to say the combine could become obsolete and the Senior Bowl, which has been around for 75 years, could finally become like maybe more the premier. But they opened it up to juniors this year, and it's now, so it's not just seniors, it's draft eligible prospects. And that's, you know, to your point, they're not training for a month and a half for the Senior Bowl. That's right after the season.
Right.
So they're coming in fresh. They're not training for just certain events. And it's practice. And it's a game, quote unquote. You know, it's not full speed necessarily, but it's still a game. But those practices and those drills, I think what's more interesting is you see guys, like I said, you see guys raise their draft stock at the combine. How much does that really translate to the field? Because I'm thinking of guys that I've covered in the past that had an incredible combine, increased their draft stock. Some of them, one guy I know jumped from a second rounder to the third overall pick based on his combine and his pro day. And he's still in the league, but he kind of petered out. You know, he's not a third overall pick impact on a team. But guys that you see do well at the Senior Bowl, especially in those one-on-one drills, I've seen them go on to have good, solid, long careers. And more teams are now going to the Senior Bowl. Pretty much every guy this week, when they've been asked, have you had a formal interview with such and such team
here?
They
talked about the Senior Bowl.
They said, well, I met with them at the Senior Bowl. And so I almost wonder if you're going to see – the only thing is that happens still during, I think, playoffs, because it's always the end of January. So, your Super Bowl teams are not there. But it makes me wonder if you're going to see coaches – and GMs now start to go to the Senior Bowl as well instead of just scouts.
And I think you really get a sense of how limited 10 to 15 minutes is when you, as a media person, get to meet all these athletes. They're mm-hmm. there for 10 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of foolish questions in there, like, who are the teams that you've met with, which we heard 500 times.
Do you believe in birds?
Do you believe in birds? I mean, there's some nonsense, but it's just not that much time. And to think that a team is going to – I mean, these guys don't remember what teams they met with. They know for the most part, but sometimes it's like, yeah, I don't remember actually which day. I don't know. I mean, those can't be meaningful conversations to the degree that it would really
alter.
Can
I speak to that? So I'm not going to go off.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
This is not personal.
It sounds like it might be.
But you have all these people asking, did you meet with this team and that team? And it's almost always, you know, oh, yeah, informal. Well,
what'd you get out of it?
Here's what in an informal interview is. These guys, they come down to this giant convention hall or room in the, I don't know if it's in the stadium or where, but so all the players are down there and tons of scouts are down there, and they're just pulling guys aside and saying, hey, how's it going, you know, and then there's 5 other scouts waiting for that guy. Mm-hmm. And so, like, how personal can you get? So when you see on Twitter that this guy had an informal interview, just ignore it. It doesn't mean that a team's trying to, that's who they're going to draft. And probably half the guys are talking to people just to throw off the other teams.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want them to know.
It's not proprietary information. Like, clearly you can ask and they'll tell you. I almost wish they would just put a list up.
Right, just so we wouldn't deal with the question.
And then,
like,
it wouldn't
then
it wouldn't be taking up questions, and you can see who met with who.
Or how about a handshake policy among media not to ask?
Oh, yeah, that'd be perfect.
Because, I mean, it breaks up, like you and I, JR and I were talking about, it breaks up the flow of an interview.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking to a guy about, some kind of
defining moment in his life.
Yes.
And then
yes.
It's like, have you met with the Jets?
Yeah.
Well, the only natural follow up to that question is, have you met with every other
Yeah,
NFL
then every other team.
Right.
Yeah, that is definitely a pet peeve that I have already in 1 year come to appreciate very much. The have you met with these various teams? There's not a lot of data to be had there. So this is a Packers podcast, and I do want to spend a little time on the Packers, but in general, we've heard from a ton of guys. I don't know what the highlights are for you. Today was the day we're recording this on Friday. We heard from the skill position guys. It doesn't really interest the Packers all that much, although we did have some interesting running back conversations with Braylon Allen and Isaac Arendo, who both played for the University of Wisconsin. But these are the highlight guys. You know, we heard from Caleb Williams. We heard from Drake May. We heard from Malik Nabers. We did not hear from Marvin Harrison Jr., who all of a sudden did not show up. Yeah. One of the other interesting developments. But I guess I'm curious, even main stage guys and maybe guys off the beaten path a little bit that really jumped out at you, or some nugget that you took away from this experience that really made it worthwhile.
First of all, you mentioned Wisconsin. As a Florida fan myself, it is March 1st, so I'd like to wish you happy Christiosa Overtime Buzzer Beater Month.
Oh, my gosh. Was that on Oh, because it's March. Okay, so that wasn't March 1st.
March Madness.
It's official.
That's several years ago, Cassidy. We have moved on from that.
Listen, give me this. We haven't won a championship. I need these moments. Let me think. Who stood out? Somebody that stood out yesterday, actually, that I was not really, really focused on was Max Melton, Bo Melton's yeah. brother. He just seems like he's a solid little DB. Mm-hmm. But secondly, he was so interesting and fascinating, sort of the opposite of his brother.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
is a lot more, you know, quiet. And we've seen others, Packer teammates, like, love to like joke around with Bo, but it's almost because they know it like makes him uncomfortable. Whereas Max was very gregarious and like smiley and, you know, wide open.
Has this chain, nameplate chain that says Mad Max on it. It looks like diamonds. It's all diamonds, but
yeah.
He said he has a car called the Mad Max Mobile. That man drives the Mad Max Mobile. I think it's going to work out for him in the NFL environment.
And he said his first NFL purchase is going to be a car. Like, he didn't even think about it. Spoon, if we buy you a diamond necklace that says Spoon, will you wear it?
An actual Spoon.
Hell yeah.
Spoon. Yes. It's a diamond encrusted.
Incredible.
Yeah, with us. Oh, yeah. Everyone would think I'm a Coke dealer or something, you know.
Why do you know you need a spoon for that?
I've just seen it in movies. I watch Breaking Bad.
There you go. Anyways, a couple of different ones. I mean, obviously you have the big ones that are going to stand out, like Rome from Washington.
Very funny.
And those guys. Ricky Pearsall from Florida, which I know I just said I'm a Florida fan, but he was not somebody that I'd really had on my radar because he stood out on that team, but I almost thought it was, you know, due to the talent around him. Like, did he stand out relative to what was around him? But then this week, I've heard other scouts talk about him, and, you know, he had a huge crowd today. So I think he could be one of those guys that the combine helps. But then, you know, again, does it translate? But the Max Melton, Nate Wiggins from Clemson, mm-hmm. another DB, you know, he's going to get out there and flash that speed that – he says that coaches have thought he was slower than he is, so he's really, really ready to run his 40. That might be one of those cases, because I think we've seen it on his tape, that he is a solid DB, and he might actually need the 40 to kind of prove, you know, that he is as fast as he is, and that, you know, maybe if he looks slow on tape, it's because he's matching a receiver and mirroring a receiver. And so, you know, that's one of those exceptions to the rule where I think the 40 could really help a guy like Nate Wiggins. You know, he could jump into the top 15 with a good time. And so those are ones that have stood out. And then, you know, you've got the Caleb Williams that everyone's going to flock to, and the Michael Penix Juniors. But I don't think the Packers need a quarterback.
No.
They do not.
So you're safe there.
Who has interested you?
Yeah, I will say I have not paid all that much attention to the quarterbacks, given the fact that I don't think
you don't
that
need
the
one
Eagles
either.
Will be in the market for a quarterback. So that was not – I know that was like an early wake-up call for – a lot of folks who were going to the quarterbacks this morning, yeah. starting mm-hmm. at 8 a.m., I was not
your problem.
Among
no.
them. No.
I mentioned to someone that I haven't had to go to the quarterbacks my entire, probably since 1990, you know? So it's like, yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it makes your life, I guess, easier in some ways. Yeah.
But who else are you looking at?
I don't know. I think like a lot of – I was looking, obviously, one of the big connections that – I guess Eagles fans would care about is Jeremiah Trotter Jr., the inside linebacker at Clemson. His father, Eagles Hall of Fame linebacker, Jeremiah Trotter, yeah. as his namesake. So, no, it was just cool to hear his, you know, the younger Jeremiah Trotter talk about his relationship with his dad, and just, you know, obviously having learned so much from his dad about the position, about the NFL, about the Eagles, what it takes to make it in the league, having grown up with that and having that really ingrained in him throughout his lifetime, but also having this sense of like, okay, I want to be my own player and carve out my own identity and that sort of thing too. So it seemed like he had a really good perspective on his upbringing and kind of the opportunities that he had going to St. Joe's Prep in Philadelphia, one of the, I mean, arguably, I think a lot of people would argue is, you know, the best high school in the state, maybe the area for sure, but for the sport. But it was really cool getting to hear from him. There's plenty of Georgia defensive backs that are in the draft this year, and the Eagles have become a hot spot for some of these Georgia players. So getting to hear from some of those guys about their relationships with some of the Philly Bulldogs, as they say. I enjoyed talking yesterday to Tyke Smith, who was also at the Senior Bowl as well, and talked to him there too, but hearing from him. And he's a really versatile player, and the Eagles are certainly in the market for a safety. I mean, they could really make the case that they're in the market for just about every position group on the defense. But getting to hear from him, he's close with some of the Eagles Bulldogs, and Nolan Smith being one of them. When Nolan was drafted by the Eagles last year, he was back in Philly. Him and Tyke Smith were back there and took him out to get a cheesesteak and, you know, showed him the lay of the land a little bit. So it's been cool getting to connect with some of the players that have some of those local connections for the Eagles.
Yeah.
The Packers and Eagles have a lot of similarities in needs. I mean, Packers need a safety. Mm-hmm. You know, they need maybe two safeties. They need inside linebackers. You know, like Trotter would be the type of Mike linebacker that they might be interested in. So, there's a lot of commonality. You know, some teams need defense, some teams need offense, some teams need everything. The best interview I saw was by accident. We were waiting for the kid from Boston College, and then there's another kid, and
Isaiah Johnson from Syracuse.
Yeah, Isaiah Johnson, right? So I'm standing there, and he's talking pretty loud, and I'm just listening, and he's like the most engaging dude I've ever. People are asking questions. He's all animated about it. He's giving these great answers, and I'm like, you need to be drafted by the Green Bay Packers. I need you in my in the locker room, because you are really smart, and he was just. He was really fun to listen to.
Yeah.
So that's how I looked at it, you know, like, okay, good construct that dude.
Yeah. You should just tell him. I'm sure he listens to you.
Oh, yeah.
He takes into account what you're saying. To your point, I came across a guy kind of almost organically as well, Chris Jenkins, whose dad played for the Panthers and the Jets, and then his uncle played for the Packers.
Cullen Jenkins, that's correct, yeah.
Yes, his uncle was Cullen
Jenkins. Well, I didn't know that was his uncle. Cullen Jenkins was a great guy.
You know what's interesting? Mike Clemens told me the other day that Cullen Jenkins, and Mike, I don't feel like he's usually an exaggerator. He said if they had kept Cullen Jenkins, they could have gotten to another Super Bowl.
Ooh.
Too
bad. Is this like when he regretted getting rid of Craig Hendrick? Like that was his big feeling? Like Ron Wolf felt like that was a big loss when they lost the punter, and everyone's like, well, maybe, I don't know.
No. Cullen Jenkins was a great inside pass rusher. You know, that's what he did. And he was really good. I don't know that 2011, maybe, it would have helped, but the way they played against the Giants is crazy. But the one thing I do remember about Cullen Jenkins, beside him being a great guy, was, and this was actually in Philadelphia, the Packers played there on Halloween, and after the game, he's in this most elaborate costume. I can't even remember what it was, but it was just like he stood out. I mean, he worked on it for a long time. And I think the Packers won that day, so he kind of got away with it. But it was really funny. He was a character.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, we heard from Frank Gore Jr. today as well. Yeah. That's another legacy player. And I thought he had some really interesting things to say, too, about living up to, you know, the standard that his dad set for him. Chris Jenkins saw him out in Indianapolis in the wild, actually. He's a massive human being. I heard secondhand when he was talking about Cullen Jenkins, his uncle, because he's built a little bit more like Cullen than he is his dad, Chris Jenkins. He said something to the effect of, well, you know, maybe we do look the same, and we do look good, but I continue to explain why that isn't exactly the type of game that he plays. But
Chris was a monster.
Chris was really good.
In my research, found that in their run to the Super Bowl, that would have been 2003, Panthers-Patriots, that Chris Jenkins had 2 blocked field goals.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
That is impressive.
Max Melton had 4 block punts.
Yeah.
That just blew me away. I'm like, I've not heard of that.
I just feel like Rich Bisaccia would be licking his lips.
He did talk about that and how well-oiled the machine has to be with everybody doing their job to get a block punt. But he did say, I led the nation in block punts, by the way.
Spoon, as he's saying, I asked him that, like, what is the secret to a block punt? And he goes into everybody has to do their part. What flashed through your mind? I just kept thinking, I was waiting for him to like pull out the line, like everybody just has to do their 111.
I was going through my head.
Yeah, you know what, after he was done on the podium, I just stopped him because I, you know, I just wanted to chat for a second. You know, I told him I covered the Packers, and you know, I said, and I asked him a couple of questions about Greg Schiano, because Greg Schiano, the Rutgers coach, first hired Jeff Hafley, and they were together for 3 years. So Schiano had a lot of influence. And I was just mentioning that, and he goes, oh, I know that. You know, he's like, I know all about Jeff Hafley. I mean, he's like, never played for him. Yeah. You know, he's like, really smart dude. You know, he knows what's going on, and Bo probably is the same way. But I was just impressed with him.
Yeah,
we were waiting for Elijah Jones, Boston College, who played with Jeff Hafley. We did talk a little bit about that on our YouTube video series, which, by the way, like and subscribe, Journal Sentinel, please. And we could touch on that a little bit. Isaiah Johnson, by the way, like, played 4 years at Dartmouth, I think, or I don't know if it's 4 years, but easily my favorite interview of the whole thing. And I'm with you, Tom. I really hope that he ends up in Green Bay purely for the content. That guy was a wild, great interview. What a delightful interview. But Elijah Jones, his eyes lit up when we asked about Jeff Hafley. He clearly there is an impact there. He's a defensive back. Jeff Hafley, as we know, you know, that's kind of an expertise for him. And it seems like everybody that we have, the few people that do know him, really have a respect for him. And I don't know if you, Tom, have gotten any greater sense of Jeff Hafley over talking to some of the people who have worked with him. But it sure sounds like you don't get anybody saying anything bad about him. I don't know if that'd be a reach if you did. But it seems like he really did have an impact on people. Do you feel like you have a better sense of him now, you know, than maybe you did going into this?
Yeah, I've talked to a number of people. The players were interesting, because a lot of times, you know, when a guy leaves a school or something like that, there's a negative feeling about him, you know, as he leaves the job and leaves the players. But Elijah Jones did not have that feeling. There's the kid from Ohio State who's pretty high about him too. Now, they're not going to trash him and say he's a piece of crap. You know, I hope he fails miserably. But
there's ways to say that, to hear that that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
If it's, well, I'm just focused on the coaches we have here now.
Right. Okay. Or I don't remember him.
Yeah. Or we didn't have that much interaction.
Or it doesn't matter who they bring in. I'm going to be the same player. Yeah. Work as hard.
One that's sneaky, I think, is if they don't talk anything about what they did for them as football, but he's a great guy. That means I like him, but he's not a good coach.
The one thing it kind of validated is all this talk I've heard Hafley say and LaFleur say, that he makes the game simple, that he's not into really complex stuff, and he breaks it down. He's a teacher. That's what pretty much the players were saying. And then I've talked to a couple coaches who worked with him, and he said that's their strength. So I think that's becoming a bigger deal in football. The 49ers defense, the Pete Carroll defense, is really a run and, you know, react kind of a defense. They don't want them confused. They don't want them thinking. They want it simple, and they want
them
to
hit it.
So, yeah. Huh?
It's what the Panthers run.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, you have a change in defense. Vic Fangio, who Packers fans know a ton, he dominated the Packers in the early 2000s, and they knew him from the Bears. Mm-hmm. So that'll be an interesting transition.
Yeah, I'm eager to see what that is going to be like. The Eagles, the defense last year, it was an interesting season with Sean Desai coming in, who actually, you know, Packers fans would also, at least, you know, Sean Desai, another former Bear who learned under Vic Fangio with the mm-hmm. Chicago Bears. And yeah, that was it didn't really work out. They made
the
in-season transition to Matt Patricia, and things did not get better under mm-hmm. Matt Patricia. But the Desai's defense had some Fangio influence to it, but now they've got Fangio in the building. The guy, you know, the father of the defense.
Yeah, he feels like the patriarch of all defense right now out there in the NFL.
Exactly right. There's so many. He has so much influence in the league. So now, what difference is this going to make on the defense? Mm-hmm. Granted, there's going to have to be a lot of personnel changes. And as you spoke about, there are just so many needs for this defense. They actually, as we've been sitting here, the Eagles released Kevin Byard, who the Eagles traded for in season.
Wow.
So, yeah, he joined the team in season, didn't have a great season, and his cap number next year was just going to be astronomical. So it just didn't make sense for them to keep him around. So they'll save a little bit of money and hopefully get a little bit younger on the back end, a little faster on the back end. And, yeah, we'll see what Vic Fangio can do to try to turn this defense around, and hopefully we'll see, for the Eagles at least, get them back on track.
I love it when teams blow things up.
Sure.
I don't like my own mess, but I like other people's mess. So when a team's like, blow it all up.
It's entertainment.
Entertainment.
Olivia, I want to go back to you because you have famously for us run the combine couple of times, competed in the combine. and you kind of touched on this a little bit about what, you know, how athletes are training specifically for these drills. And that isn't necessarily the best, you know, representation of football. But because you did some training for these drills, and I'd be curious just your background on that and, you know, what people may not realize about, you know, we see these little snippets on TV. That's about all we get. What people may not realize about that training and maybe how much goes into that, like what would you say about that whole process?
Yes. Yeah, so I did the combine twice. Combine. I wasn't bent. Well, how much did they bench?
225.
Yeah. I was benching like 50.
Isn't that the bar?
So I think I got up to, the second time I did it, it was the bar with 210. So.
Okay.
So you're like, a project prospect, but you know, you're getting there.
I'm getting 65.
There. Yeah,
wow.
Honestly,
that's impressive.
You can't even get 225 off the rack. Or 220.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, that wasn't going to happen. So, you know, I did everything else, the shuttles, the 40.
You can still find that on YouTube, can't you?
Oh, you sure can.
Yes, you can.
Don't get any ideas.
I say go and find it.
Insert link here.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And listen, I can't even compare me going through it to any of these players that are going to be going through it this week. It is just two different stratospheres of, I mean, training. Like, I didn't do any real specific training for this. Mm-hmm. I think, like, I mentioned it on the first video that we ever did. I like stood in my apartment and I was like just trying to jump a little bit, just trying to get used to that motion. And I still screwed it up the first time I did it. It was like just intuitively in my head, I was like, I don't really know what to do with my arms. But I went to Synergy Sports Performance and Scotty put me through the whole thing. So that was it was really fun. And I felt like I learned a lot just about the technique that goes into the drills, things that you don't really think about, you know, where your arms are supposed to be, you know, and where your body's just supposed to be running the 40 at any given like split of the actual drill itself. It was there's so much that you have to think about, and you might not even realize. I mean, it's just running in a straight line, but there's just so many technical details that go into it that are complicated and that take time. And the more that you do it, the better I'm sure that you can get at it. Even just going through it the second time, doing it my second year, I don't think I necessarily got any faster or stronger, but just being familiar with the drills a little bit certainly helped me, I think. But yeah, I do wonder, as we're discussing earlier, like, is this the best predictor of your future success in the NFL? I don't know. I think I would like to poke around and do more actual research before saying anything with my whole chest. But it was fun, an experiment to go through and to give it a try and understand just how much goes into like just being good at all of this stuff, because all these guys are good natural athletes, but they're working with the best of the best when it comes to just getting ready for this and going through the drills, but then and reviewing them and videotaping themselves and learning from that too. So don't ask me to do it again. I've said I'm retired. I'm not gonna. I hung them up. it's done. I can't risk any injuries.
You did solidify yourself as an undrafted free agent, so you know,
thank you.
Status.
I remain an undrafted free agent. So
your day will come.
Teams out there.
But have you met with the 49ers?
Yeah.
informally, I passed them in the hallway. And gave them a little head nod. That was my interview.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, maybe next year. Maybe this year.
Maybe this year. You never know.
I mean, you think about, too, Patrick Mahomes ran a 4.8.
Yes.
Which also is kind of funny that, like, we're so nitpicky about this that we're like, he ran 40 yards in under 5 seconds. What a, like, dud.
Right.
And
you see it when he runs the football. He's still a 4.8
guy.
Yeah,
did you see his tweet? It was hilarious.
So funny.
I retweeted that.
And then they still did it. And the funniest part was that the overlay that they did it. So if those that don't know, Patrick Mahomes ran a bad 40 when he did it at the combine. And so the NFL Network, a lot of years ever since, will do an overlay of like other players passing him.
Yeah.
And
including defensive linemen.
Yes. And he tweeted this week and was like, it's combine week. Happy combine week. All I ask is that the NFL Network doesn't use an overlay of me running slow. And they retweeted it and they were like, whoops, because they did it with a defensive tackle who ran it faster than him.
Yes.
Tom Brady re-ran the 40 this week and ran faster than he did at the combine.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow.
He could come back and win a Super Bowl if he wanted to.
Really
I truly believe.
Well, I was just telling JR the story of, you know, these guys, I don't know if they still have to do it. I think they do. They have to stand up in front of the scouts in their underwear.
Yeah, the underwear.
And so they look at them. And so there's a famous picture of Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. It was all flabby and everything like that. And then you think about the guy now.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many guys, like, poo-pooed him because he looked like that, you know?
Like, for those who know Marvel movies, the early Captain America scenes where they have, like, de-muscled Chris Evans a little bit, and he's, like, this short guy, and then he ends up winning all the rings. I do still want to talk a little bit more about Packers, Tom. We did speak about Cooper DeJean yesterday. We met with some of the defensive backs. He's really interesting to me. He will not be still coming back from injury. We're not going to see him test at the combine. He's a guy who could play cornerback or safety, maybe. He's someone that you see connected to the Packers if... Take it or leave, mock drafts, he's the guy. There's also several offensive linemen here that I think the Packers will have some interest with that 25th pick in the first round. Jordan Turner of Arizona has come up a little bit. I would still love to see J.C. Latham of Alabama fall, if only because he's from Waukesha, so there's a local connection there. But he's probably going to be off the board by then. We spoke earlier, and I asked you, do you come to these and then really have a sense of who they're going to draft when you leave? And you're like, nope, never. There's just no science to it. So... understanding there's no science to it. is there any player, you can mention those guys or anyone else that really has caught your eye through this process?
So when you're picking 25th, so much of, you know, who you're going to pick is dependent on who goes in front of you, because you just, it's unpredictable. They have an idea, but sometimes the guy you want gets picked, or, you know, they might move up to try to get a guy. I think, you know, I don't think there's a true first round safety. I'm not sure if there's a true first round middle linebacker that they could get. So then it comes down to, you know, do you trade out of there? Do you take the best available player regardless of position? What if it's a wide receiver? Would they take a wide receiver?
Mm.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what Christian Watson's future is, although I wouldn't totally bet against him, but you know, you got to get better at certain positions. Anyway, you know, Cooper DeJean is a guy who would probably fit as a slot guy or a safety. Probably not an outside corner, but I think they could use him in that position. Question is, do they re-sign Keyshawn Nixon?
Right.
And the coaches really like him, so I don't know about that. Maybe they move him to safety. You know, inside linebacker, I don't see that being a big deal. You can always use defensive linemen. So, yeah, I have no clue what they're going to do. And Gutekunst's been pretty good about hiding who he's interested in.
Yeah. Well, all right. That's the long and short of it, I think. Well, I want to know any last thoughts and what you guys are going to be working on going forward, Cassidy and Olivia, because the new year is starting here, the new NFL year. There's going to be a lot of roster moves, the Packers among them, certainly. So so what's next on your agenda?
The Panthers do need a wide receiver. And so a lot of pro days coming up here in the next few weeks for me. You know, the way where the Panthers are situated, I can easily get to North Carolina, South Carolina, Clemson, Wake Forest, Duke. So a lot of pro days coming up. UNC Charlotte, which was, I think, who produced Grant DuBose. I'm almost positive. So, yeah, going to be doing a lot of that. And then have a fun project coming up that I'm really looking forward to. You know, Panthers hired a new coach in Dave Canales, and he has a very specific plan for Bryce Young for this offseason. One of the things is he wants to get his throwing motion in practice down to 2.7 seconds because he figures if he can get it down to that in practice, when he gets into the game, you know, 3.2 seconds is a luxury. And he's going to put up a clock in practice so that Bryce Young can see the clock every time after he throws. And so we're going to do a deep dive into what it takes to get down to 2.7, why 2.7, what are the physics to shave off a hundredth of a second.
Mike McCarthy did that with Aaron Rodgers.
Really?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he had a shot clock, and it would go off really loudly if he didn't get rid of the ball.
Wow. What was his time?
I don't remember what it was. It was probably around that, you know. It might have – it seemed like it was something like that. But, they want these guys to stop holding the ball, you know, and get rid of it. So.
Yeah, so that's my next few months.
Interesting. Yes, that'll be –
And then we play the Eagles.
I'm looking forward to seeing that as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, next season will be a lot of fun. Hello, come to Brazil. See you guys soon, possibly in Brazil, but who knows. Rest of the month, like – owners meetings coming up. I haven't been to the owners meetings before. I've been to the combine before, so even though this is an unfamiliar experience because I haven't been here in a couple of years, that is definitely going to be a different experience because I've never done it before. Just kind of working on some off-season things, some projects that should be a lot of fun. We'll see how that goes, but I feel like finally things are slowing down a bit. First season on the beat, it's like, and sure. I'm sure Cassidy, you feel a similar way. I mean, you started during the season, so it's like you're just trying to get kind of a sense of everything that's going on and how things work. So it's nice to, it will be nice to go into my second season feeling a little bit more like just on stable ground.
Do people always say to you, what do you do in the off season?
Oh yeah.
My off season is 2 weeks in June.
Yeah. You just can't explain it to people about how busy you are. You know, you go from the combine to, well, first it's coaches, you know, you're doing all these coach searches, then you go to the combine, and then free agency starts in 2 weeks, you know, and that lasts for a couple of weeks, and then you start your draft preparation.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's truly never ending. They call it the off season, but there's really nothing off.
As soon as the draft,
you have
OTAs, rookie minicamp, mandatory minicamp, and then you get two weeks in.
Unless you've been on the beat for 34 years and you don't do that crap anymore. Olivia,
look at you, Paul, I have to tell you this, Olivia. Oh, I don't think I've told you this,
please.
Uh-oh. Last year, they drafted 13 rookies. The Packers did. It was an insane class.
That's crazy.
So rookie minicamp is going to be huge. And then, you know, they bring in, like, tryout players and, you know, undrafted free agents. And I think it was, like, a 50-person rookie minicamp. Right after the draft, Spoon was like, oh, wait, when is rookie minicamp? I'm going to be in Europe. I just laughed, and I was like, everybody would ask me, where's Spoon? And I was like, I think it was mandatory minicamp, too. I think you missed both.
I admit, once spent one day at mandate.
Yeah.
I go one day to the minicamp.
And somebody asked me, like, where's Spoon? And I was like, well, when you're a veteran, this is not mandatory. It's voluntary.
Yeah.
And so,
the Aaron Rodgers of the group.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Green 19 podcast. Thanks to our special guests. We're so excited to see you back. And we'll obviously be following you going forward. You can keep finding videos like this one on YouTube. If that's where you're catching us, make sure to like and subscribe. That Journal Sentinel YouTube page. But otherwise, find everything Tom has on PackersNews.com. I'll have some stuff up there as well. Already a lot on there about the combine. Peyton Wilson, who ran a 4.44 40, I think. The brother of Milwaukee Brewers pitcher Bryce Wilson. We wrote about him earlier in the week. His stock is going up as a linebacker. That might be a name to follow as well. But find all of that again at PackersNews.com, JSOnline.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you again real soon. Bye-bye.